Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, as you've no doubt seen by now, the alliances are beginning to form. More and more of them. Folks are casting their support. Folks are joining forces to stand up, to oppose the establishment, to oppose the way that things have been allowed to go, to oppose the powerful and often the corrupt. They're standing in solidarity, and folks are choosing sides now, some big names. And by now, you've no doubt seen this. You noticed that Michael Moore has joined the Oscar boycott alongside Jada Pinkett Smith and Spike Lee. So the alliance against the Oscars has completely taken new shape with Michael Moore, who, by the way, I did not even know. I didn't know Michael Moore was still, in the movie business, in the anti-capitalist movie business, taking full advantage of capitalism to produce his anti-capitalistic, anti-American movies. I wasn't even sure this guy was still around the industry. Turns out that he is. Read an article this morning saying that he is, after a day of some deep contemplation, just thinking about the issue, he's decided that he is not attending the Oscars, he's not watching the Oscars, he's not going to an Oscar party. He's probably going to not be friends with anyone he knows named Oscar. If he has a fish tank and he has an Oscar fish, he's probably going to flush it down the toilet. I mean, this guy is taking all the appropriate steps to make sure that it is fully known that he is boycotting the Oscars. And I know you've been waiting to see where he came down on this issue. I mean, he spent a full day deciding what he was going to do. So there you have it. Michael Moore not going to the Oscars here at the end of February because the lack of diversity in those that have been selected as nominees for Oscars. Which, did you also see the former Fresh Prince of Bel-Air co-star or actress went to YouTube or some social media outlet with a video basically criticizing those, in particular, I believe, Jada Pinkett Smith, for boycotting the Oscars. I did see a clip where she said, well, you know, we've got real problems, and this is not one of them. So, anyway, alliances are forming. They're forming on the political front as well, and this is undoubtedly something you've seen by now, but Sarah Palin comes out and endorses Donald Trump. This happened yesterday, and, you know, look, I have to be honest. I hadn't really considered any, you know, who Sarah Palin was going to endorse in the 2016 nomination. I knew, incidentally, it would not be Hillary Clinton. You know, Sarah Palin likes to keep her distance from those that are on the verge of being indicted, charged, being investigated by the FBI. More on that here as the program comes together. But, you know, many people thought, I think many people thought that she would endorse Trump, if folks even took the time to have an opinion on this. That she would endorse, did I say Trump? Donald Cruz, or I gotta get this right here. Ted Cruz, not Donald Cruz, not Ted Trump. Many people thought she would endorse Ted Cruz. In fact, I guess if you would have asked me who Sarah Palin would endorse, I think I would have paused and thought about it, and I probably would have said Ted Cruz. And the reasons I would have said that were, number one, Ted Cruz has stood up in Washington. Ted Cruz has opposed the establishment. Ted Cruz has defended the Constitution. Ted Cruz is a very decent, very good man, a strong Christian. And I would have thought that that would have caused Sarah Palin to endorse Ted Cruz. Sarah Palin also supported Ted Cruz in 2012 and for his Senate election. Ted Cruz said yesterday in a tweet or in a statement that he would not have been elected. He would not be the senator from Texas without the support of Sarah Palin. So I don't think it's something where Sarah Palin has animosity for Ted Cruz. But the question becomes, why does she support Donald Trump? Now, why might she like Donald Trump? I mean, a couple of things come to mind. Number one, I mean, Trump is a maverick. You know, for those of you that don't like Trump, I'm trying to... This is not an endorsement of Trump. I am trying to convey what may have prompted Sarah Palin to support Donald Trump instead of Ted Cruz, or even someone else for that matter. But I think Ted Cruz would be the next most likely choice. Some people may think Ben Carson, you know, someone who's a political outsider, someone who has a deep religious conviction, a deep faith, someone who's a very thoughtful man, a very good man, someone who's intent on restoring America, getting America back on the track of greatness. I mean, Ben Carson's that guy as well. But I think constitutionally, I think Ted Cruz is so knowledgeable and such an expert in this area, and he's been fighting it. He has a track record. I would have thought that would have been Sarah Palin's preference. Just my thought. But there are things that I can see that appeal to her about Donald Trump as well. Number one, I think he is the biggest maverick. Now, this is not meant to say that Ted Cruz or Ben Carson are not mavericks. I just think that Donald Trump is the one that is the most dramatic maverick, the one that is making the most noise, the one who is saying the things that could really shake up D.C. Of course, the others are as well. But I just think his voice is louder. He has the anti-establishment appeal going for him as well. I mean, in a lot of ways, he's turned this campaign on its head, I think. But is it because... Did she choose Trump because he's more in line with her going rogue mentality? I mean, is this about her aligning herself with the one that's at this point the most likely winner? Although I'm not predicting he's going to win, but he's been consistently ahead. Now that's national polling, and that's not how the election is or the nomination process is determined. It's not national polling; it is actual voting in states, individual primary and caucuses. But looking at the numbers, he has a lot of support. Is this simply about aligning someone with someone who's the most likely to win? Did he talk with her about a position in his cabinet or a vice presidential candidate? Does that even appeal to Sarah Palin anymore? Now, what does this do? Does this make Trump look more... Does it make him look constitutionally stronger? I'm not implying that he was constitutionally weak or anything. I'm just making observations, setting forth questions. These are not leading in any particular way. These are just things that I'm thinking about as I see this unfolding. Does it make Trump appear more conservative? I mean, there are conservatives that strongly dislike Donald Trump. There are conservatives that I think if it's Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden or Al Gore, Elizabeth Warren or whoever, sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley, there are conservatives I think that would not vote for Donald Trump. I think they would stay home. This is probably the case for any candidate. I don't know. I think people develop such strong feelings for their guy or their girl in the case of Carly that sometimes they can't see past the possibility of that individual not being the president, not being the nominee. But conservatives may, there's a lot of conservatives that think Trump is a faux conservative, a phony conservative, a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, there are some that raise questions about his past donations and his political ties to people like the Clintons, to Rahm Emanuel. We talked about that yesterday. There are people that believe Trump is too much of a emotional hothead to be commander-in-chief of the greatest, strongest, most powerful nation in the world. Look, again, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with any of these statements. I'm just painting a picture and thinking through what this Sarah Palin endorsement could do for Donald Trump. Does this make him appeal more to the Christian conservative base? You know, the left can say what they will. You know, and you hear this talk about appealing to all these groups of people, which, look, I don't like segmenting groups like that for political purposes. We are all Americans, and I do believe that the concepts that make America great, freedom, liberty, opportunity, you know, the old-fashioned values that help you achieve things in America, hard work, patience, dedication, resilience. I think those things appeal to all groups, regardless of your race and your gender, your ethnicity, your religion. I guess I would throw in there your religion, so long as you're not a hardcore believer in Sharia law, which is the antithesis of America. But these things don't just appeal to certain groups. But since everything is viewed by the left through the lens of identity politics, does this make Donald Trump appeal more to the Christian conservatives, which frankly make up a pretty good chunk of the voting base? I mean, I don't know. I mean, Sarah Palin, you know, what's her image? I think it may have changed a little bit over the past few years. I think she's still highly respected, but she's kind of faded off from the main stage since coming onto the main stage in 2008 and all the things that came after that presidential or vice presidential run with John McCain. I mean, the Sarah Palin supporters love Sarah Palin. They love her. I mean, they you talk about an committed, undying support for someone. The Sarah Palin base, I think, has that. But I don't know how big that is now. I know it's still big, but is it as big as it once was? Is it as powerful as it once was? I'd honestly like to hear, and I've looked, everything that I've read or seen online has not explained why. And I'm not saying it's not out there. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any stories, you know, any videos, any news stories. I haven't read any articles. I haven't seen anything explaining why she chose Trump over Cruz or even Ben Carson, or, you know, some of you may think she would have endorsed Marco Rubio, who kind of came in with the Tea Party momentum as well to the Senate. But why did she choose Trump over Cruz? I don't have an answer for that. I mean, maybe it is about his anti-political correct approach. I mean, when you look at the root level problems in Washington, D.C., I've said this on here before, and, you know, part of my job is to figure out how to communicate and make these things resonate. And you try different things, and sometimes you say it better than others. But I think these problems are so deeply rooted. You know, you want to talk about, we hear about systemic racism in America, which I reject. I don't believe that that's the case. It was at one time the case, but that is not the time that we live in any longer. But systematically, the system, I don't know if I want to say the system is broken, but those that go to D.C. collectively, let's say it this way, the collective group of those that go to D.C. elected to do a certain job, to restore constitutional conservatism, as in the case with many that were elected in recent years supported by the Tea Party. I mean, a lot of these folks get there and they lose their edge. I don't know if it's, you know, they become friends with people and it becomes like a small high school clique. I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is. But something happens to where when they get there, not all of them, and Ted Cruz is one of these folks that I would say is the exception to this rule. But you begin to see that the fight, it may still be there, but instead of being direct and focused and intent, it becomes this softer, more gentle approach. And that's not what's going to be needed to change the trajectory. It's not simply enough to go in there, slightly press on the brakes, and slow the momentum down of us moving full speed ahead towards the cliff. We have to completely stop the vehicle. We have to make a 180-degree turn, and we have to take that vehicle back to where we decided to drive it off the constitutional road, the constitutional path, onto this path of craziness, out-of-control spending, feckless leaders, bunch of wimps, to be honest. And we've got to get back on that path and then go that direction. It's not enough to simply stop it. And the willpower involved, the amount of fight required in an individual to do this has to be second to none. And in that case, I mean, I can see where Donald Trump is appealing in that respect. Again, this is not saying that a Ben Carson or a Ted Cruz or any of these other candidates could not pull this off as well. I'm just saying, maybe this is what attracted Sarah Palin to this. Or maybe it's as simple as she thinks he's going to win. She's aligning with him. Maybe she wants to be in his cabinet, a vice presidential candidate. I don't know. I really don't know. But it did surprise me, I'll be honest with you. My guess is that it surprised many of you as well. For those of you that follow it and have maybe followed her, maybe it doesn't surprise you as much. I'm not one that's following Sarah Palin super closely. I like her and respect her. She was misportrayed many times by the liberal media in 2008 as some stupid moron from Alaska. She's nothing of the sort. Anyway, alliances are forming everywhere. Michael Moore joining the Jada Pinkett Smith Spike Lee Alliance to boycott the Oscars. Sarah Palin jumps on the Trump train. So anyway, we'll see where this goes. But got to stop, take our first break. When we get back, a little bit about Hillary Clinton and a couple of other stories in the news. So sit tight. We'll be back in just a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is, Wednesday. It's January 20th. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining us. Email should you want to contact me about anything, which, again, I encourage you to reach out to me, to send me articles that you've read, to give me feedback and comments on things that you've heard on here. Correct me if you think I need correcting. Look, I listen. I will listen. I'm not saying that you will persuade me, but hey, I don't know everything. I definitely don't know what's going on with Sarah Palin and Donald Trump. Surprises me a little bit, but I can also see why he would appeal to someone like Sarah Palin. But anyway, email is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter, which that's our primary social media outlet at the time. Our Twitter handle is @commonsensegear, and you can connect with us on Twitter as well. So anyway, before the break, I made a major mistake, a big time mistake. I actually gave a little bit of a teaser as to what we would talk about here in the next in this segment, which the second segment of the show. And I said, when we come back, a little bit about Hillary Clinton. My goodness, if those of you, I may have just lost half the audience there. That is not a way. That is not a way to introduce, to lead into the second segment. I mean, in thinking about what I said, I might have turned myself off there. That is really unacceptable. I need to work on that. But specifically, what are we going to talk about Hillary Clinton? What are we going to say about her? What's going on? You've seen this as well. Hillary Clinton's home bathroom server, unsecure server, sitting there for all the world to see. The Iranians, with whom we've made world peace, trading prisoners back and forth. You know, they're giving us our boats back, our sailors back. We're apologizing. Which, that whole story, there's something else going on there, by the way. I don't know exactly what all's behind this, but, I mean, we shouldn't be out there apologizing. That's another story for another day, but we've made world peace with Iran, allegedly, supposedly, but any of us with a brain know that they are engaged in an epic, never-ending war against the things that America stands for. I mean, they do. They are the antithesis of the United States. They are the antithesis of the West. The Islamic Republic of Iran wants to usher in Sharia law. Sharia law is nothing more than the opposite of freedom and liberty, the opposite of what we see laid forth in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the opposite of the things that the founders said in the Declaration. Actually, in the Declaration, what the founders said to the king are some of the things you might think they would say to those that embrace Sharia law, which would include the Islamic Republic of Iran. But we've made peace with them, so nothing Nothing to see there. All is well. But they might be able, they may have intercepted some of these emails. What about the Russians? What about the North Koreans? What about, I mean, the world's on fire. You could go down the list, the Chinese. Who doesn't have this information? And that's all thanks to Hillary Clinton, the great technological genius herself, setting up private servers in bathroom closets to house top secret information. Now we learn that there's at least other emails that contain top secret special access program information. This is information that would be most sensitive United States intelligence. I mean, this most sensitive talk, all these things sound so, they soften the blow. This is critically important information that no one should have any business looking at unless they are a vetted and cleared member of the United States government, someone who has top secret security access, someone that's been deemed responsible, trustworthy to have this information. And as time goes on to show, we knew this in 2008, we knew this back in the 90s, but Hillary Clinton is not someone that's trustworthy and should be able to have this information to begin with. But she passed the test somehow. She passed and got her clearance, but then she starts playing fast and loose with the information. I saw a guy on Fox, a security analyst or whatever, he said that this information may have or could get people killed if it's in the wrong hands. And they have no idea. The Hillary Clinton team has no idea who's gotten their hands on this information. It's sitting on a non-secure server in a bathroom closet in some apartment somewhere, open for anyone that knows how to hack anything. And you know the Chinese, take your pick, go down the list. The North Koreans, all these folks are engaged. And you do not think the Secretary of State, Mrs. Clinton, do you not think that your emails would be of interest to those of us that are our enemies, those of us that are interested in obtaining information about the United States? No one can know this, pure and simple. And it's hanging out on a bathroom server in Hillary Clinton's some campaign office or whatever, some secret State Department office. I don't even know where it was. It doesn't matter. It's in a place that's dangerous, that's susceptible, that's unsecure. That's the bottom line. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine if Walmart or Lowe's or take your pick, some big retailer, some evil big business, can you imagine if they were putting our credit card information, our personal data, and playing as fast and loose with it as Hillary Clinton played with national security interests? I mean, they would be facing criminal charges. They would be subjected to months and months of interrogation by Elijah Cummings and other people on the House, on House committees or Senate committees or whatever. Heck, Obama may call them into the White House. It'd be some sort of a political show made out of this. There'd be fines. People would get fired. There'd probably be new legislation passed that would be called something like the Let's Fix the Walmart Problem piece of legislation. And everyone would be clamoring for more government control. I mean, can you imagine that this whole thing is completely and utterly stupid? I still hear defenders say things like, and there's less and less of them, by the way, but you still see her defenders say things like, well, you know, she didn't write the emails. Who cares? It reminds me of something Michael Scott said in The Office, which, by the way, huge Office fan here. Love The Office, even to this day. I love flipping on the old episodes if I'm watching TV sometime late at night, catching up on some of those great Michael Scott moments. But Michael Scott made the comment one time, look, in fact, it was about emails, ironically. I'm just forwarding emails. He was forwarding inappropriate emails, and he was getting in trouble by corporate. And he said, look, you wouldn't get mad at a drug dealer for passing drugs to someone else. He's just forwarding it. He's just giving it. He's just kind of the carrier. I mean, that's kind of the argument we're hearing here. She didn't write the emails. Okay, I don't care. Some might say she didn't even send the emails. Okay, fine. The bottom line is she was receiving them. She told people, email me information at this email address. That server was housing emails, was hosting emails that contained whatever information other employees of the State Department, other people that were government contacts, were discussing government business. It was putting that information in a place that Hillary Clinton determined where that was. Now, she should not have been able to determine this. But people were sending them there, sending her official business for the government that contained, in some cases, top secret special access program information. She just throws it on the bathroom server. Heck, there might not even have been a firewall here for all I know. This is dangerous. This is, I've said, playing fast and loose with national security. It's simply dangerous. It puts the lives of Americans at risk. And I'm telling you, she should be prosecuted for this without any question. I mean, can you imagine, what if you decided to print a bunch of flyers with secret information and drop them over the city of Beijing or Moscow or somewhere over Afghanistan? I mean, if you couldn't do that, if you can't print a flyer and drop it, and whatever the contents of that flyer are, if the people that read the flyer should not know it, then that's reckless. And that's essentially what she's done with this server. I don't care if she didn't write the emails. I don't care if she didn't send the emails. She set up a server. It's not just about sending and receiving. It's about where that data resides. It resides in a place it shouldn't be. It's dangerous. She's not keeping it safe. It's the equivalent, I'm telling you, it's the equivalent with all these hackers in the world. It's the equivalent of printing off these top secret documents, going up at 20,000 feet, going over a city, take your pick, Moscow, Beijing, Baghdad, Damascus, Tehran, Pyongyang. Take your pick. Don't even care. Pick your city. Somewhere in Cuba, Havana. But my point is, that's essentially what she's done. I know we don't see it that way, especially for those of us that may not be super tech savvy or care that much about tech. But more people can see onto her server than would have been able to grab a flyer. That's electronic. That could have been forwarded, replicated, sent to who knows where. And not only that, it's easier to find. I mean, you have to stumble on the flyer, right? If someone dropped it out of an airplane over Beijing, you'd have to find that particular flyer. But you have people that are actively looking around the world in intelligence departments or whatever. Around the world, they're looking for ways to get information. They're actively looking. And they're looking at people like, surprise, surprise, the State Department. Secretary of State, which in this case, of course, was Hillary Clinton. They're looking here. She should be prosecuted without any question. Lives are in jeopardy. As these security analysts have said, people could die for this information being made known. That's inexcusable. That's inexcusable. Stop and take our last break of the day. When we get back to the couple other stories I found in the news that I think you might find interesting, so sit tight. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Welcome back to the Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It's Wednesday. It's January 20th. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thanks for joining us. Email Todd at theantidotetoliberalism.com or connect with us on Twitter at Common Sense Gear. You know, I've said before, the last thing I'm going to say about Hillary Clinton, I'm getting tired of having to talk about her. Should she stay out of an orange jumpsuit with an ankle bracelet? If she stays out of the clink, the pin, whatever. Which, I mean, look, chances are this is just not going to happen. But let's just assume that she's able to win the nomination, she's withstood this investigation, what have you. Hillary Clinton, if she's elected president, may be the first president to ever have to recuse him or herself from her own national security meetings. She may not be qualified to hear the information required for a president to make decisions pertaining to national security. She may not be able to attend her own national security briefings because she may have invalidated her security clearance because of the way that she handled national security information. And the world is truly on its head, upside down. Which reminds me, couple of articles here I wanted to pass along related to science. Number one, I saw that there's a scientist that says, well, that's actually done head transplants on monkeys and mice, and he swears, he promises, he stands by his claim that this is possible for humans as well. I mean, wouldn't this really be a body transplant? I don't mean to split hairs here. But the idea of a head transplant, isn't it the head is kind of where, I don't know, where you think that you reside? I mean, you think about getting a new arm, you know, I can see that if you have a prosthetic limb or a, you know, I don't know, something along those lines, if science could attach a human arm to your body and you could use that. But if the head is where I think we consider, you know, the mind to be, the part of us that makes us, that the brain that works. If I get a new body, I think I'm getting a new body, not a new head. Not that my body is where I reside and I get a new head, and my head is where I reside and I get a new body. This whole idea about mind, body, and soul. But apparently we've got head transplants going on. There's some people I'd like to give some head transplants to. Some people that need some thinking adjusted, that's for sure. Most of them have a big D next to their name. They're bleeding heart liberals. They defend this stuff that Hillary Rodham Clinton is doing. They like what socialist Bernie Sanders, the nutty professor, what he's saying. They talk about sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley's six-pack, his pecs, what have you. I mean, if we give head transplant to these people, I don't know. Maybe this is a good thing. I'm not sure. But head transplants are in the news. I tell you what. Crazy here. You can't go a day without finding something crazy. Also, there's a town in Italy which has shut down Wi-Fi over fears that it is causing health problems. Now, you may have seen this. These fears, anyway. You may not have seen the information about this Italian town. But don't be surprised if and when this starts to happen here. I mean, by the way, the amount of signals going through the air, going through your body at any given point, is just astronomical. I mean, think about microwaves, radio waves, Wi-Fi signals, satellite signals. I mean, you think about carrying your smartphone, your cell phone, and then, of course, it's connecting to 3G or Wi-Fi. I mean, everything we do is taking advantage of this technology, whether it be Wi-Fi or, you know, a cellular signal or what have you, whatever it is. Now we got towns in Europe, or a town in Europe, specifically Italy, that's shutting down the Wi-Fi because they're afraid it's, I don't know, causing cancer or something or other. But I mean, I'm not really sure. And I can Wi-Fi, of course, you've got to be in proximity. But what about all the other waves that are coming through the air? And I don't know. There's no way to avoid all this. If you are indeed in fear of this, afraid of this harming you. But anyway, Italy, at least one of the towns in Italy, is shutting down its Wi-Fi due to health fears. Just wanted to pass that along to you because I'm sure it's only a matter of time before some leftist starts preaching to us that we're harming someone by putting these deadly signals into the air and that something has to be done. Anything that can drive technology backward, drive society backward, the government, the socialists are in complete favor of. So anyway, just a couple of science stories from the anti-science crowd. As a conservative climate change denier, as a Christian, as one who believes that God created the universe, I know the left thinks I'm anti-science. I'm just passing along some developments in the scientific world. But guys, that's going to do it for today. I appreciate you, as always, for being here. Email is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com should you want to reach out to me, or you can connect with me on Twitter. Twitter handle is @commonsensegear, and feel free to tweet me or connect on there as well. But guys, that's going to do it. It's going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.